Okay. Dan, you showed up every
Good morning again, John. If you put your name on the record and begin your testimony, we'll proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm John Schultz, the administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division. And I'm pleased to be here this morning to talk to you about the Workers' Compensation Division and our recommended budget. In your book, we start on page 40.
Thank you.
Just want to quickly mention our mission, which is to provide fair and effective and responsive administration of the workers' compensation system. And you can see on page 40 how the Workers' Compensation Division is organized. We have five separate sections, and I'll start actually with our compliance section, which is our largest section, and probably the core of what we do in the Workers' Compensation Division, which is to seek compliance with the law and the administrative rules. The Compliance Division is responsible to enforce claims management and employer coverage laws and to disperse monies from the Workers' Benefit Fund. They conduct our audits. They license worker leasing companies. They investigate fraud and abuse and certify managed care organizations. Our dispute resolution section, which is down in the bottom left-hand side of the organizational chart, does pretty much what their name implies. They resolve disputes, primarily in three areas: vocational assistance disputes, medical treatment disputes, and disputes over permanent partial disability awards. Our benefits and policy services section, which is in the middle upper part of the chart, maintain disability rating standards. They also have a smaller dispute resolution role, mainly in the area of some small claims management issues. They administer the reemployment assistance or incentive programs. They coordinate all of our rulemaking and coordinate all of our policy analysis for the division. Our operations section basically supports the division through supervising claims filing and supervising the registration of the guarantee contracts, which are the insurance policy contracts, to ensure that employers are insured, and they manage our data and information systems. And finally, we have an administration section, which I'm a part of. We manage our communications, public information, as well as coordinating the division training and provide leadership, work with the legislature, and do the policy and budget preparation and implementation. I'm now turning to page 41, and I'm not going to go over every line here because I think I've touched on quite a bit of this already, just hitting some of the highlights of what we do. Again, we have a purpose section, and it hits pretty close to what I just talked about, and I did mention our mission before. Our goals are to improve compensability standards, and compensability is if you type that word into your word processor, you'll see it'll come up and give you a question mark. It's a basically that word is used in the workers' compensation industry nationally, and what it means essentially is, did the accident or illness happen because of work? So one of our major goals is to improve compensability standards for the system as well as benefits for injured workers. A major goal for us is to speed up decision making so that it removes uncertainty about payments for benefits and for medical providers, to provide employers with more certainty by speeding up decisions, as well as ensuring that employers have more certainty about their future liability exposures, because employers are basically paying for this system. We try to create a less adversarial system for all, and Debbie had touched on the litigation rates and how they have fallen, and I think that Oregon can take some pride in the fact that we have created a less adversarial system, although workers' compensation at its heart has a lot of adversarialness built right in. And then a big goal for us, and something that we spend quite a bit of time on, is ensuring that insurers are processing claims appropriately. We talked a little bit about Senate Bill 485, and I did want to mention a couple of things about that. As you all already know, it's the Workers' Compensation Reform Bill for this session, and it focuses mainly on technical changes within the system to correct problems with the way the system works. And in that regard, it's different from the large reform bills that came in 1987, 1990, and 1995, which were much more sweeping in their scope. The basic goal of this bill is to seek a balance between the goals of fair and certain benefits for injured workers and fair and manageable costs for employers. Oregon's history of reform has been important, and it has been followed by many other states. We did have a system that was described in the late 1980s that was described as a mile wide and an inch deep. And basically, it was a high-cost system for everyone that did not provide very good benefits for workers. And we have been successfully changing that over the course of time to provide a system that doesn't cost as much money to run or to pay for and does provide better benefits for injured workers. The bill, if passed, will require the Workers' Compensation Division to be responsible for a few new programs. But the Workers' Compensation Division expects the bill to have no impact on our operating budget. In other words, we will absorb those programs within our already existing staffing levels and programs. The three programs that we will be responsible to administer that are in addition to what we're already doing is there is a supplemental temporary total disability or time loss payment benefit. Temporary total disability or time loss is the wage replacement benefit that are provided to disabled workers. In Oregon, we have not had a time loss benefit that has provided time loss benefits for workers based on multiple jobs that they may be disabled from. We have traditionally had a system here that only pays benefits for wages lost for the job at injury. Senate Bill 485 would change that and now provide benefits for all jobs that the worker is now disabled from. The additional or supplemental benefit would be paid for from the worker's benefit fund. And insurers have the option to have the division administer that benefit. Again, we envision that we will be able to manage that with our existing resources. Other new responsibilities include referring workers to medical arbiters if they are in litigation and there has been an independent medical examination used to deny a portion or all of their claim. That's a new program for us, and we will be providing oversight of worker-initiated depositions when they are asking for a reconsideration of their permanent partial disability award. It's the administrative review for a part of their compensation benefit, and this is another new program where they are now, if Senate Bill 485 passes all the way through, they'll be allowed to give a deposition as to their condition at the time of injury. Currently, the system does not allow that, or excuse me, the law does not allow that for workers. Again, those would be the three additional programs we'd have responsibility for. We've had some success in this current biennium and over the last few years that I did want to mention a few things about. We did propose and obtain passage of administrative reform legislation during the last session and have been implementing that, which basically eliminated obsolete functions and tasks that, frankly, didn't need to be performed by the Workers' Compensation Division. The largest piece of that was our claim closure responsibility. And to just give a little bit of background about that, when a workers' compensation claim is ready for closure, and if the worker has been missing time, or if the worker has had an injury that might leave them with a permanent disability, the claim needs to be evaluated and a determination made if the worker is being left with permanent, partial, or permanent and total disability. Several years ago, only the Workers' Compensation Division made that determination. And then, as part of the reforms that began to occur in the late 1980s and early 1990s, the workers' compensation system here in Oregon allowed insurance companies or self-insured employers to make that determination. This was very much in line with where other states had already gone. It's a claims management process, frankly. And by the last legislative session, frankly, 70% of the claim closures were being done by insurers and self-insured employers. So we came forward with a proposal for some regulatory reform that would eliminate the Workers' Compensation Division doing the claim closures, but would provide greater oversight from the Workers' Compensation Division in creating two auditors who, along with other auditors, would begin to audit more frequently the claim closure activities of insurers. This did result in a reduction of quite a few positions at the Workers' Compensation Division. We also eliminated department promulgation of utilization and treatment standards, and those are standards that the managed care organizations use to help medical providers determine how to provide care within a treatment standard. We did have a regulatory responsibility to do that, and we proposed that the managed care organizations could do that as they were already doing it, and basically got out of the business of having the government do that. And finally, we proposed to get out of the business of doing claims examiner certification and turn that over to the private sector, as a lot of certification processes are done now. There was a compromise done on that bill, and we actually now share responsibility for claims examiner certification. We continue to expand our website and have provided interactive forms, statutes, administrative rules, and publications to the public. We created a searchable database for employer coverage, which should allow people to have better access to ensuring the employer has coverage, as well as being able to figure out if a worker comes into a physician's office, which insurer to send information to. We also, as a part of getting out of the claim closure business, frankly, wanted to make sure that that transition happened smoothly, and we created downloadable software for the industry to calculate disability payments and put that on our website. At the direction of the Management Labor Advisory Committee, we have convened focus groups with injured workers over the last 2 years to implement recommendations to improve communications with workers. One result of that work is a new brochure entitled Understanding Claim Closure and Your Rights, which is available both in English and in Spanish. That was a brochure that we worked very hard with a focus group of workers to create, because they identified that as a very technical area that was very difficult for them to understand what was happening to them. We've also developed a liaison role in our appellate review unit. That is the unit that does the reconsideration or the appeals when a worker has believes that their permanent partial disability award is not correct. And this liaison works with workers through that process to help them understand what is going on. Finally, we made enhancements to our medical arbiter program, which have resulted in a decline of missed appointments by injured workers, and has also helped us recruit more physicians to add to our list of medical arbiters, which we think is important to assure impartiality and a lot of diversity in that program. our anticipated results for the next years through this next biennium, frankly, are very similar to the goals we had before, which is we want to continue to work on our compensability standards and worker benefits. We want to improve online access. In fact, we would like to, as you'll hear later, we really want to go further down the road in this area. We want to continue to provide certainty to workers about their benefits and to employers about their future liabilities. There have been some issues in the California workers' compensation market with workers' compensation insurers defaulting, filing bankruptcy. That has impacted us here in Oregon. We lost an insurer here in Oregon, Center Insurance Companies, that did default. We had a couple of weeks there where workers were not getting benefits. We want to prevent that from happening. We want a less adversarial system, and we will be ensuring more appropriate insurer claims processing through a couple of new audits that we are beginning to unveil here in the next few months. We have actually piloted to this point. Are there any questions at this point that I might answer?
That's awesome. Thank you, Manager. Along the lines of a less adversarial system, one of your colleagues had mentioned the use of ombudspersons, and I wanted to know how useful you have found that as a tool, is the first question. And the second question is, I'm aware of conversations in this building that might try to join all of the ombuds functions in one place, given that there's such a plethora of different ombudsmen for different programs. Would you have a reaction to that concept?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, on your first question, I've worked very closely with the Ombudsman for Injured Workers, Maria Carraher. We meet on a monthly basis, and that's at least on a monthly basis. We talk quite a bit more than that. And I find that relationship very, very useful. She is able to give me a heads up on a regular basis about things that are beginning to happen that her staff hears often before we do.
How many people are in her shop?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, this is Debbie Lincoln again. She is 8, including herself. Our small business ombudsman is a 3-person shop. We're looking at cutting back one of those people. The small business ombudsman, too, is extremely helpful to small businesses in walking through the maze of workers' comp issues, getting insurance for small businesses, ensuring that they're classed in the right classifications, those kinds of things. On your second question, if I could answer that, too, we feel pretty strongly that having both Maria and John as part of the department, and they are part of the director's office to give them some distance between the programs and to ensure some impartiality, but having them part of the department and close to the workers' comp division and the programs that they are advocating for, intervening for, is pretty important in terms of program knowledge, relationships with the staff that they need to work with, that kind of thing. So we would have to look very carefully at any proposal to pull all those together, to pull those two people out of our department, and try to figure out how to keep those connections going if that were to move forward.
It was only yesterday that I learned of a move to try to centralize the Ombudsman's function. And that might be something that you'd follow, and if you have any thoughts, particularly given the sensitive nature of the work that you're doing, the comment that in many cases it is adversarial, and it seems to me that having an ombudsman shop within your division here is probably very useful. There are, however, 3 pages, 8 by 10 pages of ombudsman's functions, and my question has been right straight along, how do citizens know how to access that very important portal into a division? And so it might be something that would profit from future conversation down the line, but at least the discussion arose yesterday to try to centralize those ombudsman's functions.
And Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, we'd be happy to be part of those discussions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Okay.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee. This is Satish Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services. Yesterday, I walked you through the development of the governance process on an agency-wide wide perspective. I will do the same thing today for this specific division, the Workers' Compensation Division. So if you'll turn to page 43, the starting point was the 1999-2001 legislatively adopted budget. This consisted of $30.5 million other funds. There was one emergency board action that affected this division. This is the employee compensation cost increase. That's $862,244. Then the next thing you will see is the base budget adjustments. The main base budget adjustment is related to the claims closure function. There was a reduction of 17.5 FTE as a result of that. And the other reduction is because of elimination of limited duration positions. And with that, we come to the base budget, and that's $30.5 million. One thing that is under the base budget adjustment is the merit increase. That's also common with all state agencies. The next adjustments are the essential packages. Essential package 010, it takes this adjustment done for vacancy factor. The agency provides us with a list of vacancies and for any adjustments, and both MAM and the legislative fiscal office will sit with the agency and validate the numbers that they are submitting to us. Then we do these non-personal, non-fixed adjustments, which are for unemployment, overtime, temporaries, and mass transit taxes. That's how we come up with package 010. Next, under package 020, you will see that there's a phase-in of $27,352. This phase-in is related to the two auditor positions that were approved by the 99 legislature, and is also related to the claims closure function, where they got rid of a whole bunch of positions and then they added two auditor positions that were phased in. Secondly, there are two phase-outs. One is one phase-out relates to the services and supplies related to the closure of the claims closure functions, and the second phase out is a one-time cost of the major contributing cost study. That was a one-time expenditure of $250,000. Under package 030, you see the usual adjustments for inflation and price list. The department did not request any exceptions, so they just used the standard inflation factors. And that's how we come up with the current service level budget of $30.6 million. There is one policy package which you heard about yesterday.
Representative Hayden.
Before you leave this one, is the 13.3% uniform rent rate increases, is that the DAS rate increase? And is the 25.6% inflation for AG costs the DAS?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, that is based on the DAS price list. The Attorney General charges, you will see the Legislative Fiscal Office doing an adjustment, because when the budget was developed, it was $115 per hour, and now it's gone to, well, I think when the budget was developed, it was $106 per hour, and now it's gone down to $97 an hour.
And our LFO will make that adjustment when we...
And Madam Chair, to continue, can you explain to me the difference, please, between non-uniform rent at 4.5% and uniform rent at 13.3%?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, that was a decision that was made for all state agencies.
What does non-uniform rent mean?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, non-uniform rent most probably is, that is the rent for properties not owned by state government. So if it's a private property, if the department is leasing from a private landlord, the inflation factor that the department was allowed to use was 4.5%.
Now, what is the disparity between those two figures?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, that was, again, a decision that was made for all state agencies.
No help us, Robin. Or can you?
Well, I don't have the DAS budget, but that was a computation that was made based on state-owned properties and the rental rate that is charged for state-owned properties, and I don't know what the factors were that went into increasing it by 13.5%, but I certainly can find out for you and bring it back.
It would seem if the private sector is operating 300% more efficiently that perhaps we should sell our state buildings and rent.
And Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, this was the 13.5% increase was discussed, I believe, when the DAS budget was presented.
Thank you.
So with that, we come to the governor's budget. The recommended budget is $30.9 million total funds. And there is an adjustment because of the anticipated decrease in the workers' compensation-related revenues. So in the revised budget, you will see a reduction of 5 positions and $831,029. So with that, we have a revised budget of $30.1 million total funds.
Satish, you didn't go through package 131, did you? Or did I just miss it? The technology support?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I just mentioned that there was a policy package, the 131 that and we had talked about it yesterday. This is a package that adds 2 positions, information system specialist 7 positions, and the purpose of this package is to allow the public to electronically access the Workers' Compensation Division services in a better manner.
Part of the website, in effect. Huh?
Yes, Representative Butler. And this package is going to be discussed in front of the e-government subcommittee this afternoon.
This afternoon?
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Representative Butler.
One last item in that regard, and I know this will come out before the e-government, but in the base budget, we had certain protections built into the base budget to take care of the accommodation of the Y2K issues, moving to the Y2K and some of those kinds of things. Are those being backed out before we get down to package 131?
I'd have to have the department address that.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, our costs for Y2K were really fairly minimal because we don't have any mainframes or big systems. We work mostly on PC-based databases. So we did not have the kind of cost that you saw in the Department of Transportation or the Department of Human Services. The costs that we did have, have been accounted for in this budget, and this is an addition to this package is an addition to our ongoing current service level information systems budget.
So the $281,000, if we hadn't already rolled up out of the base budget, let's say it was another $30,000, would have been reduced out of the base budget and then added back in as $300,000+ as opposed to $281,000. Is that what I understand?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, let me see if I can help with this. This is an initiative that the department has been involved in. They reported to the IMT committee and the emergency board during the interim on this. It is their effort basically to meet their customers' requests, particularly the large insurance companies, that they be able to do electronic government transactions, electronic filing and electronic auditing and those kinds of functions. And so this is, in essence, a separate initiative. And we will go through their overall IT budget when we get to central services.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Is this the place to discuss the reduction option, or will there be a time for that later?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, I was about ready to go through that.
Oh, okay. You got my attention. Okay.
She's ready.
Yeah.
Okay. Proceed.
Madam Chair, I have three more things I was planning to touch on. One was the major contributing cost study, which was a budget note from last session, the option package, and the reduction option. Which would you like me to proceed with first?
Senator Dukes, what would you like first?
Doesn't matter to me, as long as we get there.
Okay, let's just start with the budget note then.
Thank you. Excuse me. The budget note was basically given to us last session to develop a study to determine the real impact of the current workers' compensation law, specifically the major contributing cause standard and combined conditions provisions, as well as what that did to associated costs and savings to the system. Now, we brought today the full study, which you have in the ringed book. It's rather large, but we're very happy with it. It's a good study in terms of trying to determine what was the impact of the reform legislation from 1990 and 1995. You may remember back during the last legislative session, there was quite a bit of question about that, and some of the questions got to, were we eliminating too many workers from the workers' compensation system because of the new standards of proof, essentially, to find that the claim was compensable. So basically, the legislature provided funding to the Department of Consumer and Businesses Services through the budget note, and we commissioned a study, and that was reported back. The study contract was given to Mr. Ed Welch from the Workers' Compensation Center, Michigan State University, and his team, which included John Burton, who's both Mr. Welch and Mr. Burton are noted researchers in workers' compensation. They completed their study last fall and reported out their findings at that time. As you know, workers' compensation laws have been significantly reformed, and one of the major changes during the reform was a tightening of the standard for determining if a claim is compensable from the old standard, which was a material cause. In other words, if work was a material cause in causing the worker's need for treatment or their disability, then the claim was compensable. And we went to a major contributing cause standard, which means that work had to be more than 50% the cause of the worker's need for treatment or their disability. Now, why this is so important is not just because of the impact on costs and impact on workers, but this goes to the heart of the Supreme Court constitutional issue in Smothers versus Gresham Transfer, Inc. What the study found is, first of all, that Oregon is only one of four states that uses this rather high standard to judge work-related claims. And since enacting this reform legislation, Oregon workers' compensation costs have fallen. We know this. Benefits were able to go up. But we wanted to know more specifically what happened. And you've got the full study there, but I'll hit a couple of highlights for you. The number of workers' compensation disabling claims filed between 1985 and 1998 fell by 50%. The study points out that this is more likely a reflection of Oregon and national economic and safety trends than it is the higher standard that was adopted in 1990. However, denial rates for disabling claims did increase, although it's somewhat slight, about 3% since the 1990 reforms were adopted. Pre-1990, 24.9% of claims received some sort of denial at some point during the life of the claim. And the post-1990 rate was 27%, and the post-1995 rate was 28%. Now, that doesn't mean that the entire claim is denied, because there are a lot of what are known as partial denials within the workers' compensation system. The effect of the 1990 and 1990 reforms was found to have a 13.1% impact for reducing loss costs in the system. While major contributing cause was the reason for denial of 36% of disabling claims after 1990 and almost 45% of claims after 1995, prior to 1990 reforms, there were denials for material contributing cause as well, nearly 60%. And frankly, a lot of those claims would have continued to be denied for that reason, even after the reforms. The major contributing cause standard is used to deny claims broadly across all ages, genders, industries, injury types, and income levels. The data indicated that it's not used more frequently to deny claims of older workers, which was one of the specific concerns that we had. We, as part of the study, asked the contracted study group to contact physicians and find out from physicians if they felt that they could actually use this standard as a workable standard, because in workers' compensation claims, a lot of it comes down to physician opinions. And the physician is asked, is work the major contributing cause of this worker's need for treatment or their disability? The majority of physicians, in fact, the overwhelming majority of physicians contacted, agreed that the major contributing cause standard is workable for them, that they could opine on that.
I'm hearing at a good rate, processing at a slower rate here. You go back about a paragraph in what you were saying to what I thought you said was that there was no indication that age was a factor in the major contributing cause. And yet I'm looking at the chart on page 84 that shows that the over 50 workers, except for one period, have a higher denial rate since 1990 for the percentage of disabling claims than other. I mean, it seems to increase. Under 30 seems to be lower, 30 to 50 higher, and over 50 higher yet.
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, I'm looking at the same information, and that is correct. I'm basically taking information that was provided by the study group in terms of their final conclusions. And while there were trends found, they concluded that and they ran statistical samples and statistical tests on all of these, and I can only conclude, and I probably should come back and look at this again, but I can only conclude that they did not find that to be statistically significant in their findings, because they did report that there was not a significant finding that older workers, that the major contributing cause standard was being used to deny older workers' claims more frequently than any other type of worker as well. So while they may be going up for the older workers, one possible explanation, if you look at the under 30 and the 30 through 50, is that they were going up in those categories as well. So they're being used to deny older workers' claims, but not at any greater rate than any other age group, is I believe what their finding was.
I would appreciate it if you could take another look, because it just looks like the difference is between 19.7% for under 30 to 44.1% for over 50, and 44% is pretty close to half of all claims being denied for people over 50 due to major contributing cause. Now, granted, they're going to be having worked longer than the under 30 folks and more likely to have a problem with major contributing cause, but that then would indicate that there was a higher percentage of them by age. So I just
let me just share with you that and I will appreciate you getting back to Senator Dukes on that, that the House begins session at 10:30 this morning, which is 10:30 now by that clock anyway. It sounds like very impossible this building. But we'll begin tomorrow with the public testimony on this division, as well as, or OSHA, as well as the Workers' Comp Board. We'll begin with that public testimony tomorrow and hopefully get to the rest of your presentation for this. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
With that, we are adjourned.